With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week, Taika's look at World War II from a new angle. Plus, we march towards Greta Gerwig's Lady Bird follow-up, an adaptation of Louisa May Alcott's classic. I'm Jake Cunningham, and my Sonic sisters this week are Ella Kemp.
Hello.
And Kelly Powell.
Hello.
And after sticking his copy of The Shining in the freezer and looking for a new book, Sam Howlett's wandered into.
Hello, what? What is that?
Mate, I tailored that for you because you're always banging on about how much you love Friends.
Oh, yeah, it's a Friends joke.
Stick your copy of The Shining.
Oh, and that's when Joey reads Little Women.
Yes.
Yeah, I do remember that now.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Hello.
It's very early
in really
the morning.
I was really confused for a second, but yeah, I'm with you. Good. Good.
Thanks.
A good reference.
Your references are out of control.
Do you know, actually, Friends spoiled the ending of Little Women.
I think, yeah, same.
For me. So,
although that's not, is that the ending? I don't know.
No.
Who knows?
It spoils a thing that happens in Little Women.
Yes, it does.
So does The Simpsons.
Oh, I don't know. I know that one.
There's a bit where Mo reads it to kids and then starts crying.
Yes, I have seen that. I'd forgotten that that's Little Women. Good stuff. So that's Little Women. if you've seen Friends or if you've seen The Simpsons.
You've seen it all.
Yeah. Who needs another remake? All right. Shall we start with Jojo Rabbit? So this is the new film from Taika Waititi. That's the director of Hunt for the Wilder People and recently Thor Ragnarok as well. This one's about Johannes Betzler, who is teased by the other children. His knife skills are weak. He can't throw a grenade to save his life. And his Heil Hitler lacks force. Only with the help of his imaginary friend Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler.
Himself.
Played by the film's writer-director, Taika Waititi, can he hope to win over the rest of the Hitler youth? But when young Jojo discovers his mother, played by Scarlett Johansson, is hiding a young Jewish girl, he's forced to step away from his commitment to National Socialism. Standard coming-of-age tale. We've all been there. Yeah?
Totally.
Yeah. No, of course it isn't. This one is very different. This is a very, very different kind of coming-of-age story. And actually, because it's German, it's a very different Bildungsroman.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this film has very much been presented as quite a quirky little take on World War II, which is a hard thing to pull off. I think the tweet that has been doing the rounds has been referring to it as Moonrise Kingdom, a reference to the Wes Anderson film Moonrise Kingdom. And I had heard people say that this joke, this whimsy, couldn't perhaps be carried through the film, and that actually the film itself is maybe not as quirky as it presents itself initially to be, whether that is good or bad. What were our expectations? What were our feelings towards that whimsy?
I love Taika. Yeah. So I was very, very excited for this. And to be honest, the first sort of third of this film, I was like, I was in. I was like, I love this. I love how where he's going with this. When the little boy, when Johannes is at the Hitler youth camp, I was like, this is so funny. The way he's found a way to, like, camp up this really horrible period of history, obviously, and find, like, the true farce in it. But unfortunately for me, it didn't carry on the whole way through. It got a little bit tonally confused, as far as I'm concerned. It's still really good, and I'm still a huge Taika fan, but it lost itself a little bit somewhere along the way. It found itself multiple times over, but wasn't that consistent
All
the way through.
So we've got a big Taika fan there. Let's just check with you guys. Had you seen his stuff before, other than maybe the Marvel ones?
I'd seen Thor Ragnarok. I'd seen Hunt for the Wilder People. I'd seen What We Do in the Shadows. And I'd seen one of his short films.
Yeah.
The Two Boys in the Car, whatever that one's called.
Yeah. I don't remember it.
I think the kind of tone of that one kind of carries through to this in some respect, this kind of idea of, and obviously he did this film Boy, which I haven't seen, but I understand that's very a Waititi-esque film, and it's this kind of looking at the world from a young boy's point of view, and that's what he does best in those films, and I think that's what he does best here, is like present you this really horrible world in a very, as you said, very camp, very over-the-top fashion, but also it's all about how a child views this thing that's going on, and I think that's where the film works best.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's something that was tentatively explored in Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah.
Yes, that is a kind of funny buddy cop, mismatched partners on the run type story. But it's also looking at
the class system and
welfare system and viewing that from the point of view of a kid who has fallen into that.
Yeah.
And giving it the kind of the special effects and character and blockbuster feel that a child might view their own life. And that certainly carries over to how Jojo views National Socialism.
Yeah, and in the context of like the Hitler Youth, I think it's a really interesting dynamic of how like a young boy in Germany would view the Hitler Youth as this kind of cool boys club. It's like, it's adventurous, it's exciting, it's thrilling. You get to play with knives and grenades and learn about war and battle. And I think that's I don't think I've seen that done in a film before, like exploring that. The way this was kind of a proto, you know,
why it might
Cub
be
Scouts.
Hypnotic, why it might be appealing.
Yeah, and
what,
and also the fact that his mother is like, kind of like, oh, how am I going to delicately draw him away from this because he is a very young boy. I can't, you know, tell him about all the horrors of what's going on just yet, but I need to stop this before he gets in too deep. And yet it's still a very broad comedy.
Mm.
Really interesting.
Yeah, I think I'd seen pretty much all of Taika's features before, but in a way where every time I'd watched one of his films, I thought, this is a very interesting sense of humour that I haven't seen before, and I'm interested to see how this grows and lends itself to the subject matter. And each time I thought, this is good, but I didn't quite feel like it hadn't quite found the right story, his kind of style and direction and comedy. And I really felt like with this film, I don't want to imagine anyone else taking on this subject matter, because I think a lot of people have made films about World War II, and for good reason, and in many different tones and shapes and forms and everything. And I think when I first heard that Taika Waititi was doing a World War II film and that he was playing Hitler, I thought, this is going to be terrible. And also I thought, that's going to be the main focus. And because, you know, he acts in all of his films, and sometimes he's much more of a prominent main character than in other cases. But I think in this one, he finds the balance really well to not overpower the story, which is very much about Jojo. And he finds a great actor, and he's got such a good way of finding that balance and giving it that child's perspective, as there is in Hunt for the Wilder People and in Boy as well. But I don't know if it's just that the story for me is more interesting here, or the boy himself is more convincing. But to me, it's everything I've seen in Taika's films before that I've liked, and it's just everything's just come together in the best way I've
seen. Yeah, that's Roman Griffin Davis, who has now been Golden Globe nominated for this performance, and he's the backbone of this one.
Yes, he's amazing. He really is amazing, and all the children actually in this film are really good. His co-star
Archie Yates, who plays Yorkie,
exactly. He's really good, and his relationship or his chemistry with Thomas and Mackenzie is also really, really beautiful in this film, because obviously he meets this Jewish girl that his mother's hiding, and you know, this relationship starts to form, and she starts to question his perspective, basically, and he plays that so well. He can play the funny really well, and he also is the heart of the film as well.
Yeah,
I think.
It's along that, that gradual conversion is actually really believable.
Yeah,
and I think
totally.
With other child actors in a film, when there comes a point where they need to make a decision, it's very much on a dime. It's like, now I need to be this person.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is what the story requires me to be, and like tonally I change. And with a film like this that really does flop around on the tone, to have a child actor who can actually just cut through that and believably have his own arc that feels natural from one point of view to another is amazing, to have pulled it off.
Yeah, especially when there are so many, such stacked cast around him. When you've got Taika Waititi, and then you've got Scarlett Johansson playing his mother, and then you've got Sam Rockwell, even Rebel Wilson is also there. And I find that in other films where allegedly it's about a child, that you see the child on the poster, for some reason John Favreau's Jungle Book is the first thing that comes to mind. But like, you know, you've got this kid front and centre, you think, oh yeah, he's going to carry this, he or she. And then when the film happens and they kind of don't, I think, oh, fair enough, you know, they're young and I can rely on the other actors in this. But Roman Griffin Davis, I want to say he's 12, he might be 14, but he's definitely not older than 14. And it's just astonishing. Like, I feel like he's captured Taika's sense of humour so well, and it feels like he's got such a specific sense of humour that I think no one else should even try and do this. And yet, it just seems like Roman Griffin Davis has just been so specifically studying his director, and just it's astonishing kind of how quickly he seems to have picked it up, and he's just playing it out like, you've clearly been working with this man for many more years than you've been alive.
Yeah, and I think that's an award nomination that I think is absolutely fair for this film. One that it picked up already is the People's Choice Award at the Toronto Film Festival, which is always one to be keeping an eye on. It's previously been won by Green Book, 12 Years a Slave, La La Land, and The King's Speech, just in recent memory. And could you see this film, along with those four that I've just mentioned, going on to win Best Picture at the Academy Awards?
Well, it's an interesting one because, yeah, as you say, the People's Choice Award is a foreshadower for, if not Best Picture, definitely major awards contender. And I think Jojo Rabbit is a really weird film to fit along that narrative, because I enjoyed Jojo Rabbit a lot. I think it's a really fun film, but it doesn't feel like it's a big awards contender in that same respect. I actually think that might, for me, it feels like the film would be better if it doesn't have the baggage of this is a Best Picture contender. And I actually felt the same about Green Book in a way. The Green Book, I think, is perfect.
Famously, it didn't do anything with it.
Well, it's a lot of pressure. And I feel like from the second that Jojo Rabbit won, before it won this year, lots of people, Jojo Rabbit was a very divisive film in Toronto. And I think a lot of people who didn't like it were the first people to say, this will go on to win People's Choice Award, then it'll go to the Oscars, and, you know, all of these things. And it did win People's Choice Award. But I think the second it won, there were immediately comparisons being drawn with Green Book, which also won the award. However you feel about Green Book, I just think that seeing every film that wins this specific award within the same kind of range and to have the same impact on people, I think that's really dangerous. And I don't kind of, I don't know, I don't like it. It adds like a lot of responsibility onto this film.
Yeah, it doesn't need it.
Just doing its own thing.
You should just, by all means, watch The Irishman with the viewpoint that this could be a major awards contender, fine. But watching Jojo Rabbit, this should just be like Knives Out, for example.
Yeah.
You go and see Knives Out, it's a really fun, really well-made film. And that's kind of it. You don't need to then talk about, is this an awards contender? Should this be the year's awards contender? Because I don't think
it shouldn't matter.
No, but it's a weird one, though, because I think Green Book won by the fact that it was like people's second or third choice on the Oscar ballot.
So many people.
Because like it was some people put Roma, some people put Black Panther, some people did Star Is Born, and then Green Book kind of snuck through those. And there's maybe a chance it could do that again this year, because let's say the top three Oscar contenders this year are The Irishman, Marriage Story, maybe Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, maybe even Parasite. But I think there's a chance that those four are all slightly divisive in their own ways as a Best Picture winner. That
some of them will each be one person's first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And let's say maybe Jojo Rabbit is everyone's second or everyone's third. Then that's where Jojo Rabbit could sneak through, which I think, and for this to be a Best Picture winner is insane.
Yeah.
Not because of the quality of the film, but just because of what this film is. It's a really weird Best Picture winner, but sure, why not?
I wouldn't be mad.
Sure, really. Why not? Let's leave it on that. Stick that on the poster, Jojo Rabbit.
Why not?
Definitely ones for YTT completists. More so in the vein, if you enjoyed Hunt for the Wilder People and Boy, yeah. than if you're a Thor Ragnarok.
I think you
die
said
hard and you just need
Moonrake Kingdom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Actually, thinking about it, Wes Anderson.
Definitely.
But also his release schedule, which kind of is normally positioned away from awards, mm-hmm. like Grand Budapest.
And it manages to get there by itself.
Yeah, and I think position, like maybe that would have been a smarter move on this. Who knows? But weirdly, a similar film in some ways to Life is Beautiful, the Roberto Benigni one.
Absolutely.
So if you were curious to get another kind of alternate angle on events in Germany in World War II, certainly a comparable film. Speaking of, anyone seen the trailer for Pinocchio, the new Roberto Benigni?
Looks great. Premiering at the Berlin Film Festival.
Oh, it looks insane. seek that out if you can. All right.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
But we should probably wrap up on that one. And it's time to move from Jojo just to Joe. And Meg, Beth, and Amy. Updated for 2019, there's a new Little Women in Town, and they are bigger than ever. Playing the four March sisters this time are Saoirse Ronan, Florence Pugh, Emma Watson, and Eliza Scanlon. In case you need a reminder, Little Women is the tale of four daughters of a preacher in post-Civil War Massachusetts as they learn to love and live their own lives. This adaptation emphasizes the novel's feminist message of self-determination, with Laura Dern and Meryl Streep as the matriarchs of the March family, and Timothy Chalamet and Louis Garrel playing love interests. Let's find out how a new generation updates a classic. Ella, after Lady Bird, what did you want from Greta Gerwig as a director? When this was announced, Little Women, was that exactly that slot?
No. I mean, I loved Lady Bird, and when that finished, I thought, I'm thankful Greta Gerwig exists and I will enjoy anything she does next. But then when she said Little Women, I thought, really? Maybe that was because I, at that point, hadn't seen the 1994 film and I hadn't read the book, and I knew that it was something that I should have done. But I thought, I don't know, there's so many remakes that everyone, everywhere, all the time. I thought, at least, surely Greta Gerwig can write her own thing and do her own thing and, you know, lead the way for original
storytelling. I think after Lady Bird, she had... imagine a lot of offers to the point that she could probably do exactly what she wanted to do.
But she did. And the thing with this, which is great and has proven that she was right, was that Greta Gerwig, another remake of Little Women was in the works, planned for this year, even though there have been over 12 screen adaptations already. But she, Greta Gerwig, marched in to the studio's offices that's what she did. And she said that she had to be the one to do it. And she laid out her vision very clearly and she was like, this is how I'm going to direct it. This is what I'm going to do. This is my angle. And then she just so kind of lucidly laid out all of these things. And she got it and she was right. And I think to have that kind of confidence on material that not only that people know so well, but people are very protective about this book and about that 94 film with Winona Ryder, Christian Bale, and yet I think Greta was right.
I think it's also a very clever move on her part, because you know, people were probably expecting her to follow a certain path, given her mumblecore background and, you know, her collaborations with Baumbach. And Lady Bird was a very specific type of film. I think it's a clever move to go somewhere far, you know, left of center, and do a period piece, mm-hmm. and also establish herself as like a very serious, because it is, it's a solidly directed film, and you feel like, okay, I trust Greta Gerwig now. Trust her.
I'm really curious as to what happens next. We are two films from her as a solo director, and I couldn't get a sense of what would be coming after this. Like, you could even see like some Marvel or Star Wars or someone being like, yeah, 200 million.
I mean, it's interesting. She just finds these parallels, because also when on top of saying that she had all of these original ideas for Little Women, what she was also saying before it was made was that this would be even more autobiographical than Lady Bird was, which was, you know, set in Sacramento, and just she'd said how many of her own memories kind of fed into that story. And then to say that this one is now like much more personal, I mean, great, but just, it's just like constantly surprising from her. It's great.
Well, let's talk about what Greta Gerwig brings to Little Women. It's an unfussy, quite classical direction.
Mm-hmm.
And see, that is a traditional fit for the story. But I think it shows why she was a fit after Lady Bird. Because if you go back and watch Lady Bird, technically the camera is locked off. It doesn't float around. It doesn't constantly oppress over the characters. It's about performers performing and letting them fill that space, and it finds energy through its edit that keeps its scenes short, and it gives you momentum throughout, and it carries you through the story, not by forcing that rhythm and forcing that momentum onto you through its direction, but giving it a more natural feeling through the characters and through the performances instead.
Right.
And in a way, if you look at that style of Lady Bird, I think you can see why it's a fit.
Well,
for this.
Yeah, I mean, with Lady Bird, I think what I loved very much about it was that it was very clearly set ever so slightly in the past. And I think as a director, Greta Gerwig is very good at recreating memories and this sense of nostalgia, but not that feels it, nostalgia that doesn't feel too distant and too stuffy and too
sentimental.
Yeah, like too sentimental and isolating. And you definitely have that in Little Women as well, where you've got very specific and kind of loud colour grading between, you know, these two timelines. And I mean, these two timelines that are just kind of cut together in an astonishing way.
Yeah, you've just dropped in timelines, and now suddenly people are thinking, what, is Christopher Nolan involved in this?
Let me tell you about time in Little
Women. Let's establish these timelines. What's happening?
So, the book is linear. These girls grow up, and it follows a 7 or 8 year period, and it makes complete sense. Greta Gerwig's Little Women makes complete sense, but I think for anyone who knows or likes the book in any capacity, when the film starts, I think, where the hell am I? Because she completely tears the book apart, but then when she stitches it back together, it's all of the same pieces, but just in a very, just a completely brand new way. So she flits between these two timelines, present day, if you will, and then she'll go back 7 years earlier, where the book traditionally begins. So, I mean, the first line of the book is, it wouldn't be Christmas without presents. And that comes in like, what, half an hour into the film? And when it hits, it's so satisfying. And just, I think that's the way it manages to stay surprising and fresh, because you never know where the things that you know are going to pop up.
Yeah, and you mentioned this has been adapted 12 times. This is a fantastic way of reinvigorating that story as well.
Definitely. I've never read the book, or haven't seen the 90s film, unfortunately, because people love it. But you expect a certain heaviness to period pieces as you've come to experience over time, but I think this way of intercutting between the two timelines is such a dynamic way of telling the story that keeps it really fresh, as you said, and also just the way that it's done makes it feel really contemporary without it being like anachronistic.
Well, yeah, it's not doing like suffragettes or something.
No.
It's like doing Bourne camera work or something. Mm. It's like, what if this story was a bit modern?
Or it's not Marie Antoinette, is it, where it's like modern music? And...
Yeah, no, it is. Sofia Coppola's Marie Antoinette is... I mean, I love that film, but it's such a weird... like mishmash of lots of different
yeah,
eras.
This is not that.
This has got, I mean, Alexandre Desplat does the soundtrack on this, and it's like what he does. It's very classical, and it's kind of consistent the whole way throughout. And I mean, it's very nice, but it fits very specifically that era. I'd never question like where I was, but I think it's in the script, which Goeg adapted herself. But she stays very close to the book, but. That just all of the lines that people recognise and know from the book are there, but just in a very specifically tightened way. That like I wrote loads of quotes down while watching it, and I thought, oh, she must have written this herself. She must have adapted because it feels so like urgent and specific and just beautiful. And then I googled them, and they're in the book, but just like with a few extra words, and the verbs are slightly different, and just the way that Goeg has like shaped it to think, what does an audience in 2019 need to see, what will they pay attention to, without like making stuff up. Like, she doesn't disrespect any of the material, but she just knows how to elevate it, and she knows how to make people care about things that they thought they wouldn't care about.
All right. Well, and really, the things that we need to be caring about are the March Sisters. And we haven't had a chance to delve into the performances, and I just want to take a moment to do so. I'm sure we could go long on everyone who's involved in this, but I think the person to flag out of everyone is Florence Pugh.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, I love her. Love her.
She's incredible. She plays Amy March, who... So this was the first version of Little Women I saw, and then I've been reading the book since, and then I watched the 94 film afterwards, and I found that everyone hates Amy March.
Who plays her in the 94 film?
Kirsten Dunst, isn't it?
Kirsten Dunst plays the young Amy March.
Oh, okay.
And then another actress who I do not know plays her as the older counterpart of Amy March. And in this film, Florence Pugh is just incredible. So she plays her at both ages, and this is... one thing I want to say very briefly about the two timelines, which I love, in the year of de-aging and digital whatever technology, there's no aging or de-aging makeup in this. It's just everything
it's just
is
seven
so
years,
yeah.
Just
it's just so
same.
Simple. It's yeah. Like when she's young, Florence Pugh has a fringe, and then 7 years later she just doesn't. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that's completely fair enough, and it just works. But she is incredible. Yeah. I love
and
her
an
much.
amazing year for her as well.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was Fighting with My Family, which sadly not enough people saw, and she's very good in that. And I know. She was fantastic in Midsummer as well, and this, and then we've got Black Widow coming out in a few months. And
casual Marvel.
Yeah, well, and if the rumours are to believe, she's going to be kind of taking over that role into the wider MCU as well. Wow, what a year! Yeah,
great year.
And I mean, there's other performances here. Laura Dern, very good.
Better than in Marriage Story.
Big
dare
take.
I say.
Wow,
I agree.
Yeah,
she's really good in this.
I think the Marriage Story one's a bit one note from her.
I mean, if you've seen Big Little Lies,
that's that character.
It's that.
Yeah. But do go and check out Little Women if you can. If you have seen Lady Bird, I think it'll be really interesting comparison, particularly, as you say, as how invested Greta Gerwig's personal story is in Little Women as well. And I would actually just want to do a quick mention for other, like, kind of slightly lighter but still fun period pieces coming up. Is Personal History of David Copperfield.
That seems in a similar kind of vein, right?
Out in a month or so, maybe just over. I was lucky enough to get to a screening, and absolutely just kind of breathing fresh air into something that you might feel like needs dusting off and squeezing a bit of life into, and that is exactly that. So do check that one out if you can. If you can't make it to the cinema, though, you can always check out Curzon Home Cinema. Sam, what's happening there?
So, yeah, on Curzon Home Cinema, we are releasing Michael Hare's Amanda on Christmas Day. So that comes out a week before it's in cinemas. It's a really beautiful drama with Vincent Lacoste and Stacey Martin about a guy whose sister is killed in a terrorist attack, and he is forced to sort of take care of his niece. So really,
I didn't know Stacey Martin was in it.
Yeah.
I'm like, she's one of those people that I'm very happy to follow into whatever she's up to.
No, it's a really nice sort of... you know, obviously quite a harrowing subject matter, but it's a really nice sort of relationship on screen, a really good one to watch over Christmas.
Excellent. And So Long My Son will still be on there as well,
still
which we covered
so
a couple of weeks back.
Yeah.
Do go check that one out if you've got a spare 3 and a bit hours. Kelly, what's happening in the world of events?
Some Q&As for you guys. Terry Gilliam will join us for a post-screening Q&A of his film The Man Who Killed Don Quixote on the 14th of Jan at Curzon Mayfair. And that'll be recorded and will go out to other cinemas on the 23rd of Jan, so you can catch it again. And we have more Bong Joon-ho for you.
You're sounding like a market seller. We got Bong Joon-ho. We got Terry
Gilliam. Get a car. You get a car. Everybody gets a car. Anyway, there'll be a Q&A at Mayfair on the 3rd of Feb, and that will also be beamed out live to all the other Curzon cinemas except for Soho and some other cinemas around the country. So look out.
Wonderful. All right. So that's what's happening out in cinemas and on demand. If you've got any thoughts, though, on Jojo Rabbit or Little Women, you can always let us know by tweeting us at Curzon Cinemas or all of us directly. I'm there as at Jake H. Cunningham. Kelly, you're on there at...
KS_Powell.
Sam?
At SamHull_1.
And Ella?
At Ella_Kemp.
And if it's your first time listening to the show, please do subscribe. You can do that on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, wherever you get your podcasts. And when you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that would be absolutely wonderful. And for the second time in, I think, about a month, I'm going to say at the end of the show, Auf Wiedersehen.
Timothée Chalamet is really good in Little Women. I didn't have time to say that, just to let you know, Mark.
We're so surprised you think
he's
that,
really
Ella.
Good. He's really good!
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.